Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Yudam at Aleph, 9 lines down. The Gemara is discussing here Sukkah, Tachat Sukkah, and we had the Braita that gave us all the different permutations about Sukkah, Tachat Sukkah, whether both are Ksherim, or both of them are Psulot, but one is Kshera, one is Psula. That's in both directions, whether it's the Tachtona or the Elyona. And we discussed yesterday the Shita Tarishonim with regards to how they view Sukkah, Tachat Sukkah, versus the case of the tree over the sukkah, and why there might be differences within their shitot between those two different cases. Now we're going to lead into a discussion of kamihei ben sukkah l'sukkah v'tehei tachtona psula. How much gapping must there be between the upper and lower sukkah in order for it to ruin the lower sukkah? In sukkah, tachat sukkah presumes that there's a sukkah above it. What constitutes a sukkah above the lower sukkah? Samar Abuna Tefach, it only has to be a tefach high. Shekein matzinu beolei tuma tefach. Because we see by tuma, a tefach is sufficient to be considered a ohel, tetnan, from Mishnah and Olot. Tefach al tefach berom tefach, a tefach cube. You have a tefach wide and long, by a tefach high, it's a tefach cube. Meviat the tuma v'chotzeitz bifnei atuma. That brings the tuma and stops the tuma. That means if tuma tamed is contained within such an ohel, then the tuma is spread by the roof of that ohel, but it also stops the tuma from exiting the ohel. If you're outside the ohel, you will not be affected by it because the ohel not only spreads tuma, but it contains tuma. What's the size of an ohel for tuma? That is a tefach cubed. If you have a tefach cubed, you now have what constitutes an ohel, at least within dinei tuma. So based on that, Rav Huna says, well, that's the shi'ur for something considered an ohel. And the issue of sukkah, tachat sukkah, is the equivalent of a sukkah being in a house. Your sukkah being under something else. Well, what is the something else? Something else is another ohel, another covering. When is it classified as an ohel? We'll look to tuma. We'll get our definition of a tefach cubed. Aval pachot mirom tefach lo mevi velo chotzeitz. It's less than a tefach hai, then it doesn't bring it, and it doesn't stop it. I mean, Rashi says it's Tuma Ritzutza, even without Tuma Ritzutza, if you don't have an Ohel, then the Tuma goes up to the Rakia, and goes down to the Tehom. The Tuma, anything that passes over it, will become Tamei, because there isn't a sufficient Ohel to stop the Tuma from rising, or to spread it. It won't spread, but it will rise. So that's the classification of an Ohel within Tuma, is this Tefach cubed. Rav Chista v'Rabba v'Ravun Amrei Arba'a. Has to be a minimum of 4 tefachim. Shelo matzino makom chashuv pachod me arba'a. There is no significant location or something that has significance that's less than 4 tefachim. As Rashi points out, we've had this many times in the Gemara in Shabbat, the Gemara in Eruvin with regards to minimum shiurim of 4x4 tefachim like Rishut Yachid and a Carmelite. All of these items have a minimum of 4x4 tefachim. We find even it by height, by doorways in the Gemara and Chulin. And once you have that, you now have an ohel on top of an ohel. If it was less than that, according to them, it would be one layer of schach. It would just be thicker schach for the bottom sukkah. So according to Rav Huna, if it's less than a tefach away from the schach under it, then it's just thick schach. You just have two layers of schach. But once you have a tefach gapping, or according to Rav Chista and Rabba Bar Rav Huna, if you have less than 4 tefachim, it's one layer of schach. It's just thick schach. If you have more than that, then you have 2 sukkot instead of 1 sukkah, and then you enter into the world of sukkah, tachat sukkah, which the Braita yesterday discusses, depending on what the thickness of the schach on the top and the bottom is, and the interplay between them, that will determine whether the bottom one is kasher or not. Minimum shiur for sukkah is 10 tefachim. So you definitely don't have a kosher sukkah on top, because it's less than 10 tefachim, but it could be problematic for the sukkah below, because it's considered to be separate from the sukkah below. So even though the schach will not qualify the upper area to be a kosher sukkah, because either according to Rav Huna, it just has to be over a tefach, or it could be above 4 tefachim, which are below the minimum standard shiur for a sukkah, nevertheless, it'll cause a problem for the sukkah below, because it's a sukkah tachat sukkah. They're just saying that the definition for schach to be considered separate doesn't mean that the upper sukkah is a kosher sukkah. It just means that it has to be separate from the lower schach. How much do I need to be separate? So Rav Huna says it's a tefach. No. And Rabba bar Rav Huna and Rav Chista say it has to be a minimum of 4 tefachim. But then we have Shmuel. Shmuel, who thought like you, which is Shmuel Amar, Ba'asara, it's got to be 10 tefachim. My time at Shmuel, Tekshira, Kach Psula. Well, if you want to make something a sukkah, tachat sukkah, the upper one has to be a sukkah. What's the minimum standard for a sukkah? 10 tefachim. So you want the upper sukkah to cause a problem for the lower sukkah? It's got to be a minimum of 10 tefachim. Otherwise, you don't have a sukkah, tachat sukkah. Ma'ak shira basara, psula basara. Ma'ak shira basara, just like to have a kosher sukkah, you need 10 tefachim. Apsula basara. So too, to cause a problem for you, if you want a sukkah, tachat sukkah, you got to have a sukkah on top. The only way to have a sukkah on top is we use the rules of sukkah. The other deot borrowed terminology from other places in the Torah. Rav Huna borrows it from Tumah. It says, well, if it's an ohel by Tumah, it's going to cause us a problem over here. Rav Chisda and Rav Huna say, well, look at Hilchot Shabbat. Let's look in other areas of halacha. What's the minimum to be something that's significant? Fourth fachim. So they used those terminology, lifted them out and said, okay, here it's going to cause us a problem. Shmuel Kalmson says, look, the problem is sukkah tachat sukkah. If that's the case, you need another sukkah on top in order to be a problem for the bottom sukkah. The other two deot are saying basically the problem is not necessarily sukkah tachat sukkah in the literal sense. It's a sukkah under another roof, under another covering. What generates the other covering? So then we look to other places, find out what's the minimum shiur to separate between the lower sukkah schach and the upper sukkah schach, and say to you, it doesn't have to be a kosher sukkah, it's just got to be another covering or another roofing that causes you a problem. Right, so Tanan, our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im ein diyurim be'el yunah, atachtunah k'sherah. If nobody's living in the upper sukkah, then the bottom sukkah is k'sherah. My ein diyurim. What does it mean there's nobody living in the upper sukkah? Ilayim a diyurim mamash. If it's literally nobody's living there, I mean people aren't there. Atu diyurim kagarme. Nobody says that people living there is what makes something a sukkah or doesn't make a sukkah. You can have a sukkah without anybody being in there. The people should have no impact on whether it's classified as a sukkah or not. You have minimum shiurim. The shiur determines whether it's a sukkah. It's not whether someone's in there or not in there, whether it determines that it's a sukkah. The lav, my ein diurim. What does ein diurim mean here? Koshe ein ruyal, the dira. Something that is not inhabitable space. So what's not inhabitable space? Echidami. What is considered to be uninhabitable? So we know already the definition of a sukkah is the minimum of 10 tefachim. Why? Rava told us earlier in the Masechta that even if you have little branches hanging down to the 10 tefachim, it ruins the sukkah. Even though when we had it higher than that and we had the branches hanging down, it reduced the 20 amot. Over there by the 10 tefachim, we said that it was problematic because it's a diras shrucha. It's not considered to be inhabitable space when it's less than 10 tefachim. 10 tefachim is your minimum shiur to be inhabitable space. So if you define our mission to say, living and not living in there is not really living or not living. It's whether it's inhabitable or uninhabitable. That means that the Mishnah is talking about a case where we're less than 10 tefachim. And on that, you have the machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim as to whether a sukkah, tachat sukkah, is problematic. The Chachamim say it's problematic. That is a question on Shmuel. Shmuel says that the definition of sukkah, tachat sukkah, requires the upper one to have 10 tefachim. So this will cause a problem for Shmuel Shita. So, hey, dummy, what's a case where it's not classified as being a diur? That means that it's not 10 tefachim high. Michlal, the Tanakama Sabra, Afopi, Shein, Arui, Aladira, Psula. Even if it's not 10 tefachim high, it causes a problem of sukkah, tachat sukkah, against Shmuel's position. Kiyat Rabdimi Amar Amri Be'amar Rovo. So when Rabdimi came from Eretz Yisrael, he brought over from Eretz Yisrael. This is how they defined or explained the Mishnah. Im Eina Tachtona Yecholah Dekabel Karim Be'Kesatot Shelo Yonah Tachtona Kshera. The question is, how strong is the roof of the lower sukkah? If the roof or the schach of the lower sukkah is strong enough in order to receive pillows and comforters and blankets, then the tachtona is problematic. If it cannot hold those items, then the tachtona is kshera. It's exactly your question, Fred, is how strong is the roof of the lower one? If it's physically strong enough, the schach of the lower sukkah is strong enough to hold items above it, then the upper area becomes a sukkah. If you can't put anybody in the upper sukkah because the schach is not strong enough to hold anybody up there, then there's no sukkah above. Then it's really one big sukkah, because whatever you have over there is certainly not a floor or does not divide the sukkah because it's not strong enough to hold anything on it. So that's the definition over here. Michlal, now the Gemara says, wait a minute. Once you've done that, the Tanakama Savar, Afal Pi Shein Ruya Lekabel Psula. Machloket in the Mishnah is between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. Now you've just said for us that Rabbi Yehuda says, if it's not strong enough to hold these items, it's not a sukkah on top, and the bottom one is k'shera. The Tanakhama says it doesn't matter, it's psula. That means that the Tanakhama believes, even if it can't hold any items, it ruins the sukkah down below. Why would you think that? If it can't hold anything there, then you don't have a sukkah on top, and why should it ruin whatever is below? Gemara says, the only nafkamina between them is if you really pressed and you pushed, it could hold them. So you wouldn't normally put pillows, comforters in this area because it's not so strong. It might be, if you press your luck, it might be strong enough, but generally people would not do this. So in that case, Rabbi Yehuda says, forget it. There's no sukkah up there. Nobody in their right mind is going to take a risk and put these things down when there's a chance that it won't hold up, or if you really sit on the right place, it'll be okay. Nobody's going to take that risk. That's not a sukkah above it, and the bottom one is kshira. Tanakhama says, no, as long as there's some ability to put stuff up there, and people might take a risk and do it, that's enough to ruin the sukkah down below. So now we've narrowed their machloka to a very, very narrow case, which is this one case where the schach of the bottom one is not strong enough that you would definitely go up there, not weak enough that you definitely would not go up there, just sitting right on that fine line. That's where the machloket is. But if it's very strong, both of them agree that's a sukkah tachat sukkah. And if it's weak, then everybody agrees that it's not a sukkah tachat sukkah. So it's only right on that line where they have their machloket. But then again, it won't be a question on Shmuel anymore because we're not saying that it's uninhabitable space up there. We're saying it's inhabitable space. It's 10 tefachim high. It's just a question of how inhabitable it is. Is it easy to live in there or is it risky to live in there? And that's the machloket, but it does not hurt Shmuel's position that the minimum for sukkah, tachat sukkah is 10 tefachim. Okay, next Mishnah. Peres ala sadin. He puts a sheet on it, mipnei achama, to cover against the sun. O tachta, mipnei anishar. Or underneath the schach to capture all the leaves and the debris that is falling from the schach. Oh, she prays agave akinuf. Or he put it on a canopy. This is a canopy bed that has four posts. And he stretched the sheet across the four posts of the canopy. Psula. In all of these cases, the sukkah is a sukkah psula. Aval pores hu agave naklite hamita. On the other hand, if the bed has a canopy that is not placed over four poles, but rather two poles, there's a pole at the headboard, and there's a pole at the foot in the center. And then you put the canopy over like a tent, like a triangular tent. Then that is okay, and the sukkah is kshera. Amar Rav Hista, lo shanu ela mipnei anishar. It's an unbelievable chiddush if you think about it. Nobody does this, but the ramifications of what Rav Hista says right now are incredible. He says, this is only true if you put the sheet up there to capture the debris that is falling off the schach. Aval ne'ota kshera. If you do it as a decorative item, it's totally fine. If you have a beautiful printed sheet that you want to place on the roof below the schach, that is a kosher sukkah. The sukkah is kshera because noyei sukkah or batel begabe haschach. And because of that, you could have a sheet that goes across the entire top of your roof. You look up, all you see is a sheet, you see no schach, sukkah kshera. Because it was done for noye sukkah, it was done to beautify the sukkah, not for something that's functional or practical. We do paskin like that. That's what I'm saying. It's incredible, the ramifications. Nobody does it, but the ramifications are that you really could do something like this. Now, Rashi differentiates and says, how do I know when it's for decorative purposes and when it's for a sukkah purposes? So Rashi says that the Ashtar lo mishum misachech. He says that the shavi is schach lagin, because he's making the object as a schach to protect. So if the sheet is there to protect, then it is a problem. So if the sheet is there to protect, whether it's to protect from the sun, because you put it up above the schach, or whether it's to protect you from the debris that's coming off of the schach, then that disqualifies the schach. Because now you've used it as a form of schach. You're using it to protect. Schach or sichacha is exactly for that purpose. It's to protect against something or something happening to you. We know that the Pasuk in Yeshayahu says it's protect against the sun or from the elements. So if you use the schach to protect from the elements and then you have a decorative sheet there, we don't worry about it. But if you have a sheet there that's doing some sort of protection, whether it's protecting you from the sun or it's protecting you from the debris of the schach, now you've created another layer of protection, and that ruins the schach that is above it. That's Rashi's definition and the distinction that he draws between them. The Gemara says, now, pshita, that Rav Chista's statement is so obvious. Right? But we think, wow, this is incredible chiddush. The Gemara says, pshita, mipnei anishar. The Mishnah is explicit. It says, when's the sheet a problem? When you put it there to capture the debris of the schach. But otherwise, it's not a problem. The Gemara says, no, ma'u detema wa din da filu. I would have thought, no, maybe even when you make it decorative, it'd be problematic. So why does it write in the Mishnah, you put it there to capture the debris from the schach? That's normal reason why somebody would put a sheet there. It's not to be decorative, but rather because they want to capture or protect. That's only for that reason and not for any other reason. That's when it's problematic. But if it's for nauta, if it's the decorative area, kamashman, it's fine. Totally fine. Lema misayile. Let's say that this helps him. Sichacha kehilchata. He made it schach kealacha. V'itra bikramin. Ubesadinin hamitsu yarin. He put up there a woven object or a stitched object that has an imprint or an image that is sewn on top of it. V'talava eguzim, shkedim, afarsakim, virimonim. He hung up these fruits, whether it's nuts, almonds, peaches, pomegranates, parchilei anavim, or grape vines or grape clusters. V'atarot shel shibolin. Or he put up the heads of the stalks. Yeno tushmanim. He put up wine or oil. Of course, wine and oil doesn't hang. It has to be inside of, actually says inside of a glass. Bottles or glasses full of wine and oil, vesilatot and flour. Obviously, these are all symbolic because this is the harvest festival. So we're talking about the produce that you're bringing in from the fields and celebrating what you've produced and thanking Hashem for that. The schach itself, the Gemara says, comes from solat yekev and solat goren. It comes from the leftovers of the goren and the yekev. Because that's the end of the harvest. That's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to use items from the harvest to show your thanks to Hashem during the harvest festival. So here the Gemara is talking about the same thing. Here are fruits and vegetation and items that are part of the harvest, things that you'd be thankful for, and that's what you hang up. Now, asur listapek mehen, you're not allowed to utilize them. Once they're up there, they become muksa for the purpose of noyei sukkah. Ad motzei yom tov acharon shel chag. Until after the last day of Yom Tov. If he makes a Tanai condition, then everything goes by the condition. So now, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is, I have a list of items that can be used as Noyei Sukkah. The first two items here of Noyei Sukkah are Kramin, Ubesadinim, Haimutsu Yarim. Those are woven items and sheets that are colored or stitched on, have images on them. That would seem to support Rav Chista's position that you can have Noyei Sukkah, that are sheets or these items that you can put under the schach, and that would not people sell the sukkah. And that's a proof to Rav Chista. The point being that here you have sheets and weaves and things that are seem to be Noyei Sukkah that are placed under the schach. Where it says, Dilma min atzad. Who says they're hanging it under the schach? This might be hanging on the side or on the walls of the sukkah. Who says you're putting this underneath the schach? This Breita that we just quoted never defines where the items are being placed. Just tells you these are things that people put in as Noyei Sukkah. Telling you, you know, again, what we just discussed before are things that make sense to use as Noyei Sukkah that imply or are in consonance with the celebration of Sukkot and the ideas in the themes of Sukkot. But it doesn't tell you where, and therefore mi min atzad, and therefore won't be approved to Rav Chista. Right? In general, when we have items or halachot that are subjective, the Chachamim generally move a din derabanan in front of it to make it objective. When it comes to items that require kavanah to determine whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing, we generally avoid them because people are by nature gray. And so they'll say it's for decoration and then it's really because they want to be protected from the sun, and it's a very fine line when you're sitting between them. So in general, we avoid doing things, even though it's totally fine here to put up a sheet that is decorative. But the problem is that you really have to be putting it up there because it's decorative. Like you start saying, oh, it's like it's waterproof. It happens to be that it's plastic as well. All these things where people have ulterior motives as well. Then we start to worry about it. So I think that's probably why, in general, the practice developed not to do these types of things, even though it's completely mutar according to the Gemara. Not anybody arguing. It's without a safek that it's mutar in the Gemara. The Gemara even called it pshita, that was the diuk out of our Mishnah. The second thing is here about the Tanai. The Tanai, as Rashi points out, is that you have to say, any bodel mehem ben ashmashot. I am not separating them from ben ashmashot. For anything that's muksa, muksa for these types of items is determined ben ashmashot. As you enter in Sukkot, ben ashmashot of entering into Sukkot will determine whether this item is muksa. So in order to avoid it becoming muksa, what you have to do is say that all ben ashmashot, I retain my focus on these items, that they're mine and for my utility. If you do that, then you can set whatever conditions you want with regards to Noyei Sukkah. They don't become designated for Noyei Sukkah. to say, any bodel mehem ben shmashot. Then you can say, I'm going to use it during Chol HaMoed. Now, the other thing is, and this is a large Tosafot that discusses it over here, is that the sukkah does not become mutar until Motzei Yom Tov Acharon, until after Shmini Atzeret. And Tosafot wants to know why. Why do you have to wait until Motzei Shmini Atzeret for these items to be okay? Why aren't they already okay on Shmini Atzeret? Shmini Atzeret, there's no din of sukkah on Shmini Atzeret. Unless you're in Chutz La'aretz, that's correct, but in Eretz Yisrael, or the Din Min HaTorah, Shmini Atzeret doesn't have any Din of Sukkah. It doesn't have a Din of Sukkah. Why are there no Sukkah Asurim? Tosafot strengthens the question. He says, by Lulav. By Lulav and Etrog, you have the same problem. Lulav and Etrog, they're designated for the mitzvah. You can't eat the Etrog during Sukkot because it's Mukseh L'mitzvata. It was designated to be used for the mitzvah. Once the 7 days have expired, and now you're on Shmini Atzeret, you can use the Etrog. You can eat your etrog on Shmini Atzeret. So how come by lulav etrog, 7 days are up, and Shmini Atzeret, you can do whatever you want. Whereas by sukkah, even though the 7 days are up, on Shmini Atzeret, you still can't take things off the noyei sukkah. You have to wait till after Yom Tov Acharon. Again, in Chutz La'aretz, it'll just be postponed a day. In Chutz La'aretz, it'll be Shmini Atzeret, you'll still have the problems because it's Sveika D'Yoma. And then the question will be Simchat Torah. For lulav and etrog, you could use them on Simchat Torah if you want to eat them, or eat the etrog. And for Sukkah, you still have to wait till Motzei Simchat Torah. Question will then arise if you have Shabbat also in between, but leaving that aside, Tosafot wants to know what's the difference. Tosafot says the basic difference is the way the mitzvah functions. When you have lulav and etrog, if you take them and do the mitzvah on Yom HaShvi'i, you've completed the mitzvah. The mitzvah is done. You only need to take a lulav and etrog once a day. Once you've done the mitzvah, you're done. Then we come into the end of the seventh day, and now you're entering into the eighth day. The question is, ben hashmashot, at that time, what is the status of the object? Now, truthfully, after you finish with them on the seventh day, technically you don't need them anymore. They're not really huksa la mitzvata. Why are they still muksa? Because the night before, when you came into the seventh day, you had designated them for lulav and etrog. So they retain that status for the whole day. But as soon as that day ends, it's over. So because of that, ben hashmashot is not really a sur with regards to a lulav and etrog. The day part of it is, but the night part is not. And because of that, you're freed of the mitzvah. And that's why on the eighth day on Shmini Atzeret, you can use the etrog. Because it never became muksa ben hashmashot. On the other hand, if you have a sukkah, the mitzvah of sukkah never ends. If you want to eat any time on the seventh day, you have to enter the sukkah. Even if you ate there in the morning. Even if you ate there for lunch. If you want to go there in the afternoon and eat, you got to eat in the sukkah. The sukkah's mitzvah is still alive. All the way through ben hashmashot. If you want to eat all the way till ben hashmashot, you've got to go into the sukkah. Ben hashmashot, you've got to go in the sukkah. Now, how you eat ben hashmashot? Those of us just takes it for granted. It's not so simple because you need kiddush for shmini atzeret. It's ben hashmashot. Shouldn't be in the sukkah, not be in the sukkah. Leaving all of those other halachic issues aside, Tosafot says when it comes to ben hashmashot, then you would have to be in the sukkah. So the difference between them is whether ben hashmashot you have an obligation to do that mitzvah. Or the only reason the problem of ben hashmashot is because the day before it was asur. So with regards to lulav and etrog, the only reason it's problematic ben hashmashot is because on the seventh day, lulav and etrog are for the mitzvah. So the only thing causing the problem ben hashmashot is the daytime. That means that after that expires, that will not affect the eighth day. On the other hand, sukkah, ben hashmashot, you're still obligated to go in there. The reason you have to go in ben hashmashot is because you're still chayav in sukkah all the way to that last minute, all the way through ben hashmashot. So because of that, that causes it to be problematic all the way through the eighth day. That's the distinction that Tosafot writes. You could come up with cases where lulav and etrog would also be problematic. If you didn't take a lulav and etrog all seventh day, and you only got them ben hashmashot, maybe over there it would be problematic during the eighth day because you would still take the lulav and etrog during that period of ben hashmashot because you haven't accomplished the mitzvah. So that's a possibility of equaling them out. The other possibility is you could argue that eating in the sukkah ben hashmashot is all based on the fact that it's the day before that you're chayav. So therefore, you're right, you have to eat there ben hashmashot, but that's only because of the day before. It's not because of ben hashmashot. So you could argue against the position of Tosafot. We do pass an halacha like Tosafot. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, Tafresh Samachay and Tafresh Samachvov. The distinction that is drawn here between lulav and etrog and sukkah. Lulav and etrog are mutar and shmini atzeret in Eretz Yisrael and Simchat Torah in Chutz La'aretz. And Sukkah is Asura until after Shmini Atzeret in Eretz Yisrael and after Simchat Torah in Chutz La'aretz. Right, now the Gemara says, Itmar, Noei Sukkah ain mima'atzim b'sukkah. The Noei Sukkah do not reduce the space in the Sukkah. Amravashi u'minatzad mima'atzim. But from the side, they are mima'at. So now these items, or these Noei Sukkah that you put in there, as Rashi points out, that they're lav mincha chaninu. They're not part of the roofing. They're not part of the protective covering that you have there. So since that's the case, they don't affect the size of the sukkah. So if you need a shira sukkah that's a minimum of 10 tefachim high, it won't reduce that 10 tefachim. Even though if you had tzchach that hung down, it would be problematic, as Rava said, because that's a diras sukkah. But decorations are part of the living space. They're what you put into the living space to make it inhabitable or to make it nice. So because of that, they do not reduce the living space below the 10 tefachim. Obviously, the same will be true if it's 20 amot high. That if you have decorations there, they're not going to reduce the space to below 20 amot. So they won't help you in that case as well. Whereas if you have a schach that hangs down, it will help you with the 20 amot. So it goes in both directions in terms of the noye sukkah. But umina tzad minimati means that if you have the minimum shiur of sukkah is 7 by 7 tefachim, over here the noye sukkah will affect that space of the sides. So that's the way Rav Ashi explains. Min yamin avdei Rav Ashi, and yamin the servant of Rav Ashi, it misha le ketunta b'maya. His ketonet, his tunic or his cloak, got soaked in water. Vishtachta amitalauta, and he put it to dry off on the top of the sukkah. Amar le Rav Ashi, dalyo, to take that down. Delo limru kamisachchei b'davar mekabel tuma. So people don't say that you have a davar mekabel tuma, which we'll learn in the Gemara or later on in the Mishnah, that davar mekabel tuma is no good for schach. And now I have a cloak that's hanging over there, and it's a davar hamekabel tuma. People are going to think that's what we're using for a schach. So don't they see that it's soaking wet and it's dripping? It's like hanging on the laundry line. They know that it's not there for schach. So Gemara says, no, the chiyavsho, kaminallah. When it dries out, that's the problem. I'm not telling you to take it down now. I'm telling you when it dries off, make sure you take it down right away. So over here you have now, machloket amongst the Rishonim had to deal with this little piece of Gemara. This little piece of Gemara over here suggests that if you put a cloak on top of the sukkah, it doesn't affect the sukkah yet. As Sadin, if you put a sheet on top, it ruins the sukkah. So what's the difference? Now this will be impacted by these Rishonim's view of the sugya before, of sukkah, takat sukkah, as well as the sugya of a tree over the sukkah. All of these items are joint at the hip. Tree over sukkah, sukkah over sukkah, sheet over the sukkah, and a cloak over the sukkah. You have to create some sort of differentiation in all these cases to explain the differences in the cases. Rashi says, this is what Rashi saw in the Mishnah as well, Rashi says the difference is whether you put it up to be schach or you didn't put it up to be schach. In the case of a sheet, you put it up to be schach. That's why it's a problem. It ruins the sukkah. But the cloak, it's clear you're not putting it up to be schach because you're drying off the cloak. So it's putting up there to dry the cloak, not to cover the schach. Based on that, it doesn't ruin the schach. So as long as it's wet, then it's obvious that you put it up there for the purpose of drying it. Once it dries out, it's not obvious. But it's not posel the sukkah. According to Rashi, that's not posel the sukkah because it's equivalent to putting decorations up there. It's just you're putting something up there that's not schach. That's the way Rashi deals with it. That's right. That's what he said. Take it down because of Maratayan. So that's exactly. According to Rashi, the problem is Maratayan. It's not a problem being posel the sukkah. Tosafot brings from the Tshuvat HaGaonim. He says that the case here is a case where Chamatam Ruva Mitzilta. This is similar to Tosafot in yesterday's daf, where he said the case of the tree above the sukkah was a case where the schach was thin and the tree was making it that together with the tree it was Siltam Ruva Michamata. So this is another case where it's Siltam Ruva Michamata, and therefore putting the sadin, putting the sheet up there causes a problem because the sheet is providing a part of the shade that you should have had come from the schach. Aval, if tziltam ruba mechamata, if the tziltam is merit kosher, ain't as it sadin posolta. Tosfot says, you put a sheet on top of a sukkah, it's only problematic, just like by the tree. It's only problematic when the sukkah doesn't have sufficient shade on its own. If it has sufficient shade on its own, then the tree does not cause you a problem, and a sheet will not cause you a problem. You put a sheet on top of it, no problem. Your schach was kosher schach. And therefore, the sheet won't cause a problem because you have a kosher sukkah without the sheet, and so too by the cloak. You throw the cloak on there, you have tziltam ruba mechamata, no problem. Based on the Tshuvat HaGaonim, that's what Tosafot says or explains, or explains this Gemara. Because he says, the ain't mitzdarik schach pasul, v'ali schach kasher, came into below pasul, tziltam ruba. Says that the kosher schach and the pasul schach don't join together because the sukkah doesn't need the pasul schach. Since it doesn't need it, they don't join together. It's only when it needs it, do you have the problem? That's what Tosafot said. When you need the tree for the part of the tzel, then it ruins your sukkah, unless you put them together. You mix them together and they're batel. But here, where it doesn't need it, putting a sheet on top, no problem. You put a cloak on top, no problem. It's a huge chiddush that it doesn't affect it. Even though you're putting a covering on it, it won't impact the sukkah because the sukkah was kasher. The Baal HaMor, the Shitato, has a similar thing. Baal HaMor says that once you have a kosher sukkah, You can't ruin it. You can't do anything to ruin a kosher sukkah. That's what he said before. Dependent on whether the sukkah was there before the tree, or the tree was there before the sukkah. If the tree was there first, then it ruined the sukkah, and then you can't fix it unless you shake the tree, get all the leaves off, and show you don't want the tree there. That's chavata. Chavata for him means to bang it. To shake it and bang it. Not chavata, like Rashi says, to lower it. But if you have the sukkah there before the tree never ruins the sukkah, because kosher sukkah can never be ruined. And he bases it, he says, on the Gaonim, which is similar to what Tosafot brings here from the Tshuva Gaonim. Once you have a kosher sukkah, you can't do anything to ruin it. And that'll be his shita over here as well. The Rabbeinu Tam says that the reason that you're putting the sheet there in these instances is to protect the sukkah. Why are you protecting the sukkah? Because the sukkah is actually thinning out. Why are you putting a sheet underneath the sukkah? Because the leaves and the debris are falling from the sukkah. Once the leaves and the debris fall from the sukkah, the sukkah will no longer have more shade than sunlight. So why do you put the sheet there? To keep the debris up there so it remains that Tseotam Ruva Michamata. Same thing above. Why do you put the sheet above? To protect it from the sun. It's not to protect you from the sun, it's to protect the sukkah from the sun. Because if it dries out, it won't be Tseotam Ruva Michamata anymore. So the reason you're putting the sheet there is to ensure that Tseotam Ruva Michamata. So here's a little bit of a play on what Tosafot said from the Gaonim. Over there they were just saying plain that it was chamatam ruba mitzilta. The Rabbeinu Tam has a twist to that and says it's a case here where it is siltam ruba mechamata, but the sheet is ensuring that that remains the case. And once you do that, that's what's causing the problems. The sheet is what's ensuring that it will have siltam ruba mechamata. Exactly. It's benefiting the schach, and that's what makes it that it's problematic. There is a shita, interesting enough, but the shita of the Rishonim, the Ritva, I think the Ran as well, over here suggests that you put a cloak on top of the sukkah, it ruins the sukkah. Just like a sardine ruins the sukkah, you put a cloak on top, it ruins the sukkah. So then, what was going on over here? Why did Rav Ashi say to leave it there? No, Rav Ashi knew that it ruined the sukkah. He wasn't eating in the sukkah, he wasn't in the sukkah. His problem simply was maradayin. He wants to know what other people are going to think. If it's dripping and it's wet there, nobody's going to sit in the sukkah because it's dripping on you, and it's wet. It's clear that it's there and it's posel the sukkah. So nobody will make a mistake to sit in such a sukkah. So there he says, leave it there. Because I'm not sitting in the sukkah, we're not using it, and nobody will make a mistake. Once it dries out, I'm not going to go in such a sukkah. It's a pasul sukkah. But other people might get the wrong impression or might sit in it without realizing it because it's not dripping. And they'll sit in there and it'll be in a pasul sukkah. So what they say in the end is that it's true. That you put a cloak on is no different than putting a sheet on top and it ruins the sukkah. So in general, we pass in that way that don't put anything on top because it ruins the sukkah. Bidiavad, we can be in a shat v'dechak and you have no other type of sukkah. Then we might rely on some of these other Rishonim who would say that you have a sukkah k'sheira in these unusual cases. And now, itmar, noyei sukkah muflagim mimena arba'ah. You have noyei sukkah that are hanging more than four tfachim away from the sukkah. Rav Nachman amar k'sheira, Nachman says no problem. Rav Chista rabba baravun amrei psula. They say it is problematic. So now four tfachim, if you remember back, was for Rav Chista and rabba baravuna. When they said sukkah, tachat sukkah, they said what's the size of the upper area that makes the pasul, they use four tfachim. So what they're saying here basically is, if the noise sukkah extend more than four tefachim, they become separate entity. Once they're a separate entity, they cause you a problem vis-a-vis the schach. If they're within four tefachim of the schach, they become batel to the schach. They're part and parcel of the schach and they don't ruin it for you. So you can sit under decorations, and even though you're sitting under a decoration, not under a schach technically, because the decoration is between you and the schach, no problem. Why no problem? Because it's batel the gabei schach. That's the way Rav Chista and Rabbi Avuna say. Rav Nachman says, the noy is always batel to the schach. The whole point of the noy is to decorate the sukkah. So by definition, it's batel to the schach. Doesn't matter how far away it is, that's the whole point of the noy. The noy is to decorate the sukkah. Now, Rav Chista, Rabbi Rav Huna, Iklu, the Bei Reish Galuta, they went to the house of the exilarch. Ag Ninu, Rav Nachman, Besuka, Shinoya, Muflagim, Imena, Arba'at, Fachim. Rav Nachman had put them in, or set them up in a sukkah, whose decorations were more than four tefachim away from the roof or the noye sukkah. The reason being that Rav Nachman's the abbeitin, and therefore the exilach followed the psak of Rav Nachman that you could have it more than four tefachim away from the sukkah. Ishtiku velo amar lei velo midei. They went into that sukkah and said nothing. So amar lehu hadur behu rabbanan mishmatayu. Says, did you reverse your opinion? How come we put you in a sukkah? Rav Nachman says, I put you in a sukkah, it's kosher for me, but according to you, it's not kosher. How come you didn't speak up? How come you didn't say anything? Malay, no problem. Anon shluchei mitzvah anon. We're shluchei mitzvah, upturim in a sukkah. The reason we didn't say anything is because we were patur from sukkah anyway. And since we were patur from sukkah, we didn't make a big fuss about it. Because we are shluchei mitzvah. Shluchei mitzvah, Tosafot points out, shluchei mitzvah are upturim from doing something as long as they're engaged in the mitzvah. and being engaged in another mitzvah would ruin the mitzvah that they are doing. It's the equivalent of an osik b'mitzvah, father b'mitzvah, and as Tosfos qualifies in many places, that's only when you're osik b'mitzvah. Just because you have a mezuzah on your door doesn't pater you from any other mitzvah, because you're wearing tzitzit. Doesn't pater you from other mitzvot. When we say that osik mitzvah, pater mitzvah, means you have to be engaged in the mitzvah. So there are two things here. What is the mitzvah they're being osik in? It is the vaker et rabban, to visit your Rebbe during the regel. That we learn out from the Isha Shunamit with Elisha, that her husband says, why are you going to Elisha? It's not a Shabbat today. It's not the Chodesh. It's not one of those special days when you normally would go, implying that you do go to see your Rebbe on those days. So they were going to visit the Rebbe. It's the regel. They're going to visit the Rebbe. And as Tosfos points out, if they went to find a kosher sukkah according to their daya, it would take them out of their way and it would cause a problem in terms of their getting to their Rebbe and seeing their Rebbe. So that's why they were shluchei mitzvah and they were pturim from a sukkah. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, mutar lishan bekila besukah afal pi sheyesh lagag. So now it's mutar to sleep within a kila in the sukkah, even though it has a roof. V'hu she'eino gvo asara, as long as it's not 10 tefachim high. So here's a statement from Yehuda Amar Shmuel about canopies on beds. Just as background, there are three different types of beds, canopies that you can have. You have what's called the kinof, which we saw in the Mishnah, which is a four-poled canopy. There's the naplitin, which is the one which has a pole at the head and the foot of the bed that stretches across. But that has more permanence to it. Then it's what's called kilat chatanim, which is the canopy of the chatanim, which is similar to the canopy of the naklitin, but it's less permanent. Something temporary, something just some sort of sheet that they put on top. Those are the three different levels of canopies you can have, and there are differences between them. And that's what the Gemara is going to discuss now. He says, you can be in kilah besukah, even though it has a gag. A gag means that it's wider than a tefach at the top, at the peak. As long as it's not 10 tefachim high. Tashma, we have a bright. He's not yotzei his obligation with regards to sukkah if he's in a kilah. It's when it's more than 10 tefachim high. So if it's more than 10 tefachim high, it's a problem. If it's less than 10 tefachim, it's not a problem. You sleep under a bed in the sukkah, you do not discharge your obligation of sukkah. Ha targama Shmuel b'mitag v'asara. Shmuel already explained this, that we're talking about a case where the bed is more than 10 tefachim off the ground. Tashma. Okay. Our Mishnah. Osh pires agabi kinofet psula. If you spread the canopy over four poles, it's psula. Hatanami digvi asara. That it's more than 10 tefachim high. Like it says, v'alok tani hachi. Doesn't say that. Titania. Naklitin shnayim v'kinofot arba. A canopy that is on two poles, that's called a naklitin. A kinofet is a canopy on four poles. Pires agabe kinofet psula. If you spread it across the kinofet, it's psula. Agabe naklitin kshira. Ubavaj lo ye naklitin gvoin min amita asara. As long as the naklitin are not more than 10 tefachim up, michlau, the kinofet afu pi she'en gvoin masara. That if the four-poled canopy is problematic, even if it's not 10 tefachim high. My answer is, shiny kinofet de gviye. Kinofet's different because it's more permanent. So this is where we come up to aloha, that a four-poled canopy is problematic, even when it's less than 10 tefachim, because it's permanent. Because it's permanent, it has more significance even when it's not 10 tefachim high. So you don't have to reach 10 tefachim to give it significance and ruin your being in the sukkah. So kinofet is problematic even below 10 tefachim. Naklitim will only be problematic once you hit 10 tefachim high because they are less permanent structure, and therefore only once they hit 10 tefachim high does it cause a problem for you. Bahari sukkah agabe sukkah tekviya. Then we have a sukkah agabe sukkah, which is kavua. Ve'amar Shmuel kach shira kach psula. That the way that the sukkah on top ruins the sukkah on the bottom is when the sukkah on top has to be a kosher sukkah. That means it has to be a minimum of 10 tefachim. She's talking about a permanent structure. It's as permanent as a canopy, the upper sukkah. And yet, you need a minimum of 10 tefachim. So as Imre hatam del mifsal sukkah ba'asara. Hakad l'shvui ola. Batsim yasara nami abi ola. You're talking about two different issues. Talking about one issue is a sukkah tachat a sukkah. The upper sukkah is only classified as a sukkah if it's 10 tefachim high. So then it's a sukkah tachat a sukkah. Do you need the minimum shiur to get a sukkah tachat a sukkah? Over here, our question is, do you have an ohel? Now, an ohel makes a difference when you're inside. What we're worried about here is, are you inside of something that doesn't allow you to have schach above you? That's not determined by a sukkah, tach a sukkah. That's simply determined as, are you in an ohel? Are you in something that has a roof above your head? If you have something that's a roof above your head, then you're no longer sitting in the sukkah. Not because of sukkah, tach a sukkah, because you have another roof on you. You're not in the sukkah anymore, you're in something else. Whereas, sukkah, tach a sukkah is a separate psul. nothing to do with the roof, because you have two kosher sukkot at the time. The schach is kosher on both of them. It causes a problem because if there is a gzeret ha-katuv, that sukkah ta-sukkah is problematic. So now, ohel is defined differently than sukkah. Sukkah is defined by ten tefachim. Ohel has a different definition, and that's what we're discussing over here. Here we're discussing the issue of ohel. Now what we're trying to distinguish between is, if you're laying in the sukkah, you sleep in your sukkah, and you're under your sheets, nobody's going to say that you're not yotze the mitzvah sukkah. So when is something just like clothing or sheets on top of you? And when does something become a canopy or an ohel that it now separates between you and the roof of the sukkah? So that's determined by the dinei ohel. Sukkah tachat sukkah is a different din. That's what the Gemara says. It differentiates between them. Amar tachlifa barav yimei amashmol, ayashen bekilarum. Someone who sleeps naked inside of this canopy, the kilah, motziro sho chutz the kilah, he can stick his head out, bekore kriyat shma. And he reads Kriyat Shema. It's considered enough separation between him and the outside. Now, if it was an ohel, then it wouldn't work. Because an ohel would just mean, the equivalent is what the Gemara is going to say, if you're in your house naked and you stick your head out the window, that doesn't make it okay to say Kriyat Shema then. Because the house is not considered to be covering your body. When is it considered to be covering your body? When it's a sheet, or when it's something that would be clothing and not an ohel. So what you see from here is that if you're in a kilah, naked, you can put your head outside. That means that the kilah is considered not to be an ohel, but rather to be the equivalent of sheets or clothing over you. Now, Tosafot points out over here that Shmuel doesn't seem to be worried about libo ro'eh ervato. The definition usually of being naked, we say, is when your heart sees your erva. It's not that you, your head sees your erva, but if your heart sees your erva, that's the whole point of the gartel. Gartel is when you have a tunic. That's a single piece. How do you separate between your erva and your leif? You have a gartel that separates. That's the origins of the gartel that you put on to separate between libo and erva. Now, over here, it seems that the Shmuel is not considering that at all. Unless you say that when he sticks his head out, he also gets his heart outside. The Gemara says, Meitavik, Yashen bikila arum, lo yotzi rosho chutz dekila bikra kriyachma. We have a braita that says just the opposite, that you can't do that. Gemara says, Hachamai skinan shkushvo asara. Depends how high it is. If it's 10 tefachim high, we just said before that a kilah ruins the sukkah when it's 10 tefachim high, then it becomes an ohel. So it has a din of ohel, and it ruins the sukkah. It's also, you can't stick your head out and read Kriyat Shema, because now you're just sticking your head out the door, you're not covering your body. Other than if it's less than asara, then it's not an ohel, and then it's like equivalent of having sheets on, and not having an ohel above you. Hachanami mistavra, that makes a lot of sense. From Tani Seifa, ha lama zed dome. What is this similar to? Lo mei babayit arum. He's standing in his house naked. Shalo yotzi rosho chutz lechalon. We cry Kriyat Shema. And then you stick your head out the window and we cry Kriyat Shema. That doesn't help you. Shema mina. So there you see that the issue is whether it's an ohel or whether it's a sheet. Now, the Gemara makes an independent statement, which is ubayit nami. Afa pishem kvasara. Came into kviya ohalohu delogara mikinofet. In a house, even if it's less than 10 tefachim, which means that it's not really a house. But since it's a permanent structure, you can't call that your sheets. You can't call it that it's covering your body. So if you're in a house that's less than 10 tefachim, which halachically is not a house, it's not a beit dira, but if you're naked in there and you stick your head out, that won't help you in Kriyat Shema. Similar to the kinofet. Just like the four-pillared canopy, even when it was below 10 tefachim, it caused a problem for you, because it's not a sheet, that is considered to be an ohel. So it'll cause you a problem in the sukkah, it will also cause you a problem in terms of Kriyat Shema. If you stick your head out of that canopy, you can't say Kriyat Shema. It's the equivalent of sticking your head out of the house. And if you're under that in the sukkah, it's going to ruin the sukkah for you. Right? Nalishna achrina, I'm going to read it because it's basically the same thing again, just a slight variation in Shmuel, because tomorrow's daf is a very long daf, so I'll try to get a little more done today. Lishna achrina. Amrila. That's what they said. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. That's how we started this part of the sugya, from Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Mutar lishan bikilat chatanim b'sukkah. You're allowed to sleep in a kilat chatanim in a sukkah, lefish in la gag. Because it doesn't have a gag, it doesn't have a roof. Afapish v'asara. Even though it's 10 tefachim high. So as opposed to the previous statement where he said a kilah up to 10 tefachim is okay, but above 10 tefachim is no good. Over here he says even above 10 tefachim is okay, because it doesn't have a gag. It doesn't reach a point at the top where it's a tefach wide. Ayashen bekilah v'sukah lo yatsa yedei chobato. A person who sleeps in a kilah and a sukah is not yotze. Hakamai skinem sheish lagag. That's a case where it has a gag. It might be 10 tefachim high, but there it's wide one tefach at the top, and that's what causes the problem. Tashma, naklitim shnaim bikinofot arba. Naklitim is a canopy with two poles, kinofot is four poles. Peres, agabe kinofot psula, agabe naklitim kshira. Buvaj loye naklitim gvoyim minamita asara tfachim, as long as they're not 10 tfachim high. Ha gvoyim minamita asara psula. So afapish ein lagag, even as have no roof. If it's 10 tfachim high, it's a sukkah psula. So you see that 10 tfachim is a threshold for this. Shani naklitim de kviye. Naklitim are different because they're permanent. It says, ikviye lahabi kikinofot. If they're permanent, like be, let it be like a kinofet that even under 10 tefachim is problematic. No, so the Gemara says, the gabe kinofet lo kvi. The gabe kila kvi. This is what I described to you before. There's a relationship here. The most permanent structure is the four-poled canopy. There's in between that you have this naklitin, which is the two-poled canopy. The last one that we have is the kilat chatanim. So the kilat chatanim is the most temporary and one that we have the least worry about. Naklitin sits in the middle, and then you have the kinofet. Kinofet is so permanent that even under 10 tefachim it's problematic. Naklitin are quasi-permanent, and therefore above 10 tefachim they're a problem, below 10 tefachim they're not a problem. Kilat chatanim is so temporary that even above 10 tefachim they're not a problem unless you have a gag, unless it's a tefach wide at the top. Well, and since a naklitin might be there, attached to there regularly, the kilat chatanim might be that it was put there specifically for the purpose of the chatan. Darish Rabba Baravuna, mutar lishan bikila, afu pishesh lagag. You can sleep in a kila, even though it has a roof. Afu pish gvasara, even though it's 10 tefachim high. Kiman, who's that like? Rabbi Yehuda. It's obviously not like the shita that we saw until now, but it's like Rabbi Yehuda. Damar lo ati olarai umavatal ol keda. A temporary ohel can't ruin a permanent ohel. When you look at something as temporary and something as permanent, the permanent structure trumps. So if you put it, again, if you're in your bedroom and you put up a tent in your bedroom, it's clear that you're living in your bedroom, not in the tent. The tent is just there, but it doesn't ruin the fact that you're in your bedroom. You're still in your bedroom. Same thing in a sukkah. You put up a tent in your sukkah. You're still in the sukkah. The tent's not going to ruin it. It's not. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, noagim ainu lishan tachar amita mipnei azkenim. We were young kids, and the zkenim were sleeping in the sukkah, and there was no room, so we slept under the beds, and so it wasn't a problem. So Gemara says, v'leim halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So why doesn't he just make it easy? Say halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Why does he have to say the case? Oh, it's kila that is 10 high and tefach wide and still okay. Just say halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Yamar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. If you said halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, havamina hani mile mito. That would be a mita to the gaba asuya, because it's made for the other side. The reason sleeping on the bed is not a problem is because the mita is not made to be a covering. It's not made to be an ohel. It happens to be that it's on feet that keeps it above the floor. But it's not made to be a covering, an ohel. It's used on top. It's not used underneath. It's used on the top side. So that's maybe why it's not problematic. Aval kila dilatocha suya. A kila, the whole purpose is to be in the canopy. Maybe over there, that would be problematic. Emelo, kamash malon, that's not the case. Time of the Rabbi Yehuda, the real reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda is not because of the function of the object, but rather because lo ati ol arai mevatel ol keva. Because an ol arai can't ruin an ol keva. Lo shna mita, lo shna kila. Doesn't matter if it's a bed, doesn't matter if it's a kila, those are fine. Tosfot points out, ein alocha kein. To sleep under the bed is not mutar in the sukkah. We don't pass an alocha this way. And that we are choshesh for the first lishon of Shmuel, and that means that even when it doesn't have a gag, and it's 10 tefachim high by a naklitin, we worry about it. And if it's anything that's quasi-permanent, then we also start to worry about it even under 10 tefachim. So we try to avoid all of these items in order to not have a problem inside of the sukkah. Okay, we'll stop here.